out to the Black Vinyl Collective. fair warning, Trav is jacked up today. I don't know what he's jacked up on, but he is just jacked up. We're like 35 minutes into hanging out with Seth and Stevie Sorrow, and he's just super, just all kinds of full of it. What's up, Trav?
I'm fine. You again, for every single show that I've been on, have lied about what state of emotion I am in, and I don't understand why you keep doing this.
Let's go to Stevie.
I'm his cousin, so ask me if you want the truth.
Okay. What's up with Stevie? I mean, what's up with Trav, Stevie?
This is normal.
Okay.
This is normal.
It's like every Thanksgiving dinner with you two. This is what it's like. Yeah. Excellent. I have the joy of being with Travis in the same vicinity right now.
I'm glad you said in the same vicinity.
We're not in the same room. We're in the same zip code. We're on the same street, the same address. And it's actually been pretty chill today. We played some disc golf.
Yep.
And ate some Chinese food.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. So it's been kind of chill. But I guess maybe, in the past half hour, it's gotten a little excited.
All right, let's throw that out there. So let's get to the important topics.
Sure.
If you order honey chicken with white rice... would you assume it comes with pineapple?
Honey chicken?
Honey?
I'd be thankful that it came with pineapple.
That wasn't the question, Steven.
I wouldn't assume it came with pineapple, I don't think.
But you
cannot assume anything with Chinese food.
I was so upset that I ate every single bit of it. Apparently it wasn't that big of a deal.
You were really bummed. Yeah.
Kind of surprised me.
It all disappeared in about 30 seconds, so you were really upset.
It was so good, I almost chewed it once.
Mm-hmm.
What's your beef with pineapples? Your dad never hug you or something? That seems to be the root cause of everything.
He actually...
I had a bad experience with the church.
He actually complained about it as he was eating it. I felt I needed to remind him, you don't need to put it in your mouth at the same time. You can leave it on... No. And he was just like...
My point was, it's the pineapple juice is already in, so at that point... Yeah, I might as well just eat the pineapple or grab some vitamins while I'm complaining, you know? It wasn't bad. I was a little surprised to see pineapple in there, that's all.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting that honey chicken is pineapple flavored beef. Or was beef when you said beef?
You're wrong.
Was that meant like
because I don't know what the hell you're talking
about. What's wrong with the beef? You have a beef. I didn't
you
know
did
if
have
you meant
beef with it. Yeah.
No, I don't have beef with it. I had chicken with it. That's
I see. Okay. I think I said, what's your beef with pineapple? And Steven's...
Okay, got it now.
He ran with that one.
Wow. So we should probably start over,
because
like
this
is terrible.
Podcast is brought to a halt. And
this is the show, right? This is the show.
We are recording. Oh, boy.
Beef.
Maybe we should take a break.
Collective.
Maybe we should get some... Shut up. Maybe we should take a break, go get some Chinese food with or without pineapple. I don't care either way.
Oh, it'll be with, and they won't tell you. It'll just show up that way.
So, all that to say, Stephen Sorrow is joining us live in studio. If by live in studio you mean he's sitting at home on his computer and we're talking over Skype.
That would be it.
Welcome,
Stevie.
Thanks for having me, finally.
I know, it's been a while. We keep wanking on about Unteachers and how great the album is, and you. And
I think I've been mentioned in every episode, right?
Yeah, and then Greg did the whole episode that was about whatever 10 things about Stevie or the top 10 reasons why Stevie's hot or something. I can't even remember what it was, but
wasn't it the top 10 things that Black Vinyl Collective could do to make its podcast better?
How many of those did we do?
And Steven
never mentioned Megadeth. Ray's Fugazi. What were some of the other things?
Well, I think if he had 10 reasons or 10 things to make it better before, he's probably got like 15 to 20 at this point. So,
yeah, right.
Don't order the honey chicken. I'm just throwing it out there, you know. I was just listening to Fugazi today while I was working. I texted Seth. I have proof.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just got their new record they put out, the first demo.
Thing?
Really good. Really heavy. Some really heavy songs on it.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to sell out. I just I don't have the budget to buy personal records right now. Sad panda. But
it's Christmas time. What happened?
I had to buy presents for everybody else. I don't know. I got four kids, not one little infant baby who's like satisfied with a Baby Einstein book or something. Come on, man.
It's true. I presented my daughter with her first Bible, and she farted. That was her response. Literally, I handed the Bible to her, and I explained to her, you know, the future. Like, you know, this is why we're giving this to you, and, you know, we want you to meet Jesus personally, and blah, 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 you know. And then and her, I was like, so what do you think? And it was just like the biggest, like, lowest toned adult fart ever.
Well, now we know she's yours. At least she's in the right family.
Yeah.
What were you expecting other than that as a response?
Gee, silence might have been a little better, but
I thought for sure Steven's kid, if it touched a Bible, it would burn its hands, it would scream and run up across the ceiling.
I kind of thought the farting in response was sort of similar, like sort of a Damien Omen thing. Like, I need to really start praying for this child. Her first rejection was anyway.
So how old is she now?
She's a little over 2 months.
And how has it been? How have the past 2 months been?
They've been amazing, really, honestly.
Okay.
You know, it's everything everybody always says. It's exhausting physically, but your body learns to recoup from that, sort of. And
really? When does that happen?
My brain doesn't feel like it's functioning quite right, but then, like, you know, right when you're about to, like, leave the room and punch a hole in the wall, like, you look at her and you're just like, oh my gosh, you're so cute. Oh my word, what the heck? How in the world did this happen? And yeah, so it's like, it's really fun.
Good.
Really, really amazed. It's amazing how quickly your life changes and you how quickly you self-improve. Like, suddenly everyone's drama doesn't matter to you and your own drama doesn't matter to you. So it's been a wonderful, amazing experience. Probably, like, you've heard a million times, people always say that, oh, it's the best of times, the worst of times, you know, but it really is amazing.
Kids are a great way to set a pick to ignore the rest of your family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm busy raising children. I don't want to hear from you for the next 8 years. You
know? It really is. Yeah. Where before it was like, I just dodged those things and I had no reason to dodge them other than to hide, you know, now I actually have like a something I can say, hold up and say, well, I can't deal with that right now. I have this.
Right.
So
right,
it's great.
Beautiful.
I don't know how you guys do it. Like, well, not you guys per se, but I have a lot of friends who are like, Steven, you and I are almost exactly the same age. We're separated by a month or something. And
yeah.
You're having your first kid and my oldest is 14. I have a lot of friends who are my age or older and they're just now. You know, I have a friend who is about to turn 40. He had his first kid about 2 years ago, and he's having a second one, pregnant now. I could not imagine having newborn children in my house at this moment. I do not know how that's physically doable.
I kind of wished I had, knowing what I know now about it, I kind of wish I had started 10 years sooner. But then I think about where I was at 10 years ago.
And well, Steven said she's 2 months old. He just figured out how to make babies about 9 weeks ago. So he's actually, he didn't waste any time, you know?
Now, there's.
I Googled it.
But that's an interesting Google
search. A lot of tips on the internet. Yeah,
lots of tips.
Yeah, tips. Don't Google lots of tips. don't do it.
There's a lot of upsides to having them early, and there's a lot of upsides to having them later. And I don't think one way is necessarily better than the other. Personally, I'm glad we got started early, but I have a lot of friends who, like I said, are just now having kids and, you know, they had first descents on, mountains in Alaska snowboarding and stuff because they had their own life for, you know, the last 15 years. Whereas we've been raising kids, which was, I don't know which is scarier, first descents on mountains in Alaska or raising four kids. I don't know.
I have been thinking about, like, you know, my friends who are similar aged and who are parents, and I'm kind of, you have like a weird moment where you think about them and sort of how they are as people, and that they've already been where you are at and are like way ahead of you by, you know, decade or more. And just, I don't know, I always think about those things. Just, it's nothing really specific to say. It's just weird thoughts like, wow, like Travis, for example, you know, his kids are over a decade old. Like, you know, I know Travis as he is now. He's 10 years ahead of me. Like, it's just amazing. Like, I think, like, what I'm going through is such an amazing experience. And I'm like, wow, all these people have already done this so long ago. And, I don't know. It's nothing really specific, but it's kind of amazing to think about for me. But I think about weird things like that. Just like, Jesse Jeremiah, I talked to him, and he's got a 14-year-old. Man, that's really crazy. Like, you know, he's been doing what I've been going through, and even more insane and more magical, I suppose, for 14 years of this. Like, crazy. And yet I'm talking to you, and you're, you know, you seem so, you know, like, you seem like you're not ready to kill yourself, which is great. I guess that's like a sign of hope. That's a good sign. That's a good sign that you guys are alive and able to do energy, like podcasts and music and all that sort of thing. And
I was having this conversation with a friend recently, and I have two 12-year-old twins and a 7-year-old, and my dad didn't have me till he was 42. Yeah. So if you line up all my kids' ages and count that as a year experience, like, for instance, my twins are worth 24 years of experience right now. By the time I'm 42, I will have 45 years experience with children by the time my dad had me. So I don't know. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that number. You know what I mean?
Well, the moral of the whole point we're saying is that Seth's day is coming.
Yeah, I like I like cats. Me and cats get along really well.
My cat just died this year, so I have nothing really positive to say about cats.
Seth had a great line. Steven stomped it with a dead cat. Yeah.
My cat died.
That went dark quick.
You guys want to publicize this as a video podcast? I will go out in the front yard with a shovel, and we will make this a real podcast.
Too far.
Too far. This just got dark.
No dead cats.
That's another podcast, I think.
My next record is all about this. Cats.
Get swinging dead
dying.
Cat in this podcast without hitting the awkward, right? Am I right? Huh? Nothing?
Nope.
Wow. That seems like a perfect spot. Take a break and listen to something.
Hey, you know what? It's 2015. That's the 24. That's the 20-year anniversary of Failure to Yield by Crux. So here's some Crux. Love that album, it's so good. And I'm not just playing it because Greg
was
on here.
Because of Greg.
Yeah, I'm not just playing it because of Greg. I love that album.
Yeah, I feel like it's an understated in all the musical podcasts that I've been involved in, all the episodes, but I would have to say that's one of my that's seriously on like the top 10 of my favorite punk albums. I'm not a huge punk guy. I don't have like 1,000 punk albums, but that's one of those records where when I was dealing with high school and dealing with kids who didn't respect Christian music, I was able to win them over with that album. It was undeniably heavy and crazy.
I remember the first time I saw him, I was like 16 or 17 or something, and I was playing in a band called Hardship, and we were opening or playing second or I don't know, whatever. Crux was playing after us. I remember loading our gear out and seeing Rich with his super long, super nice blonde hair, and I think he had some like acid wash jean shorts like rolled up or something. He looked like a total like 80s butt rocker. And I remember seeing them come up, and I specifically was thinking like, oh, these guys are gonna suck. And they came on, I was just whoa, literally like one of the coolest bands ever. And
they were so good. And Rich, I love Rich's kind of he kind of has like a Neil Young vibe. Like, if you ever watch Neil Young on stage and sort of his dance and his mannerisms and stuff, it's like Rich is kind of coming from a totally different place, but it somehow really works. And he's a trained vocalist, you know. His voice is
really
like too good for punk rock, but somehow it really works. And you got Greg kind of bringing more of a metal sound to it, and even just everything, the drums and bass, are just everything about it has like a metal approach. It's very abrasive, and a lot of double bass. They do a lot of these parts where normal drummers are just doing the whole like don't jump, but don't jump, but don't jump, and with them it's like they'll be throwing like with the double bass while they're doing punk riffs, and it's just they were so aggressive.
I love it.
Yeah, they like that's we were talking with Nick I don't know last episode or the one before, I don't remember, about our favorite punk albums. And when I think of punk, I think of stuff like Crux. I don't think of the Sex Pistols. Like, the Sex Pistols are pretty boring to me.
I'm too young to care about that band.
Yeah, I guess me too. You know, but that's what I think of. A little bit heavier tinged, faster, like Crux, like Old School Neurosis, like stuff like that. I love it. And actually, Trav and I were talking the other day, and Greg's the whole reason why Unteachers and Veritas Final got hooked up, because Greg was like, hey, man, check out Stevie. And
I am on the Unteachers album and don't even know this story. So, Steven, you have the floor.
I think we just covered it, really.
Well, the quick version is that I met Greg in 2000 on tour with Tantrum of the Muse. I was already a huge fan of him. I loved Empty Tomb. I loved Crux. Both bands were disbanded at that point. We were playing in a place, I think, in Eugene, Oregon. And he showed up, and I couldn't believe he showed up because I was a huge fan of his music, and he was there taking pictures of us and hanging out, and we just kind of hit it off, and it was just brief, you know, brief socializing. We went our separate ways, and fast forward to, I guess, Facebook, somewhere along the lines like that. Like, we were online socializing and reconnecting, and we just kind of always online kept in touch and that sort of thing. And then around the time Travis, you and I were starting to do the album, and we were getting kind of close to recording what we thought was going to be the first half of the two-part album.
Oh, yeah.
Two-part EP, I should say.
That was my idea.
Yeah, well, we were going to do a split with Crux, and that was the whole plan I think we were trying to do, right? And then I'm not sure in what order, but he had told Jesse about what we were doing and kind of like connected us. And I probably would have never have run into Jesse except maybe buying the Pillars of Humanity vinyl. I probably would have found out about that and bought that, and maybe that's what would have connected me later. But you know, I was already well, you know, involved in that by that point. But
the Unteachers,
yeah, Greg,
the Unteachers Grace and Thief split was supposed to be Unteachers Crux split. But Crux ended up not getting back together, and Grace and Thieves was the only band with a song ready, so that's what it became.
Yeah, and I would love to still one day get something out with Crux, but who knows if they'll ever do their thing. I don't know what's going on, but
I harass Greg about it all the time, and man, I would love it, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Stuff some
or just do another band like Crux or Empty Tomb, and just, you know, a new, it's like Van Halen, you know, how many vocalists do they have, you know? Do like Van Halen 3, but with Crux, you know?
So, you think if Crux could get Gary Cherone?
No, not what I'm suggesting at all.
Oh, okay. I was half listening. Sorry.
Wow.
I don't know that it's even that Rich isn't available. I think it's just that, I don't know, they're all busy, and they're all, it's kind of like, I don't know, we're all adults and we all have kids, and you know, some stuff. I know. But
You said adults. I'm sorry.
They
I do think that if there was an album from Tooth and Nail that should have a vinyl reissue. And I'm not suggesting that Jesse should go out and do that right now, but I'm just suggesting that if I, in a perfect world where vinyl reissues from Tooth and Nail's past catalog were coming out, I would say records like Failure to Yield, certainly they did manage to get their second record pressed, and that's sort of available. You can still find it. Cakewalk. But Failure to Yield, I thought, was a better record, and it's a shame that never really got pressed, because it is seriously really good. And I would say records like Blenderhead, even the first record, Prime Candidate for Burnout, would be a good reissue as well. But yeah, I would say, Greg, if there's any way to celebrate the 20th anniversary of that album, that would be it.
But we talked about that briefly, but I don't think Tooth and Nail even owns their back catalog. I'd actually talked to Tooth and Nail around the time of the Crucified self-title, because I had a license out from them, and they were saying, yeah, maybe on Failure to Yield, and I'd actually even asked them what it would cost to just buy all the rights, and they never really got back to me, and then they sold off all their back catalog, and I don't really know where they're at now. But
I recently got to read the Tooth and Nail Records book that came with the documentary, and inside that book was a unreleased photo of Crux, where they were all wearing like wigs, girls' wigs, and I got to see Greg in a wig, which was kind of weird. But I'm sure he knows what I'm talking about. I don't know, but
he better. He better.
I have a.
The only thing worse than remembering wearing a woman's wig would be a period in your life when you can't remember wearing a woman's wig.
Right.
So he probably remembers.
I have Crucified. I have a Crux Cakewalk flat, one of those flat, like almost like a record cover that they used to get with, you know, like for promotional. You could flip it over and there's a picture of the band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my brother-in-law Justin, who he's playing Narcissist, he gave me this thing right when I first met him, and he scribbled over the word Crux and he wrote Neurosis under it, because the picture of them, they were all wearing these like barbell mustaches, and they look kind of like they would kill you if they saw you in the street. So that was another. So yeah, so in contrast, I've seen them as tough guys, and I've seen them in dresses. So it's interesting, or wigs, and but
weird. Turtle.
Yeah, interesting band, Crux, for sure.
So the Crux Unteacher split never happened, but
that didn't. No,
carried on anyway, and then magically, like 4 years later, the LP just happens to come out. It was just the Unteacher's LP just kind of just fell into place with no problems at all, right?
Yeah, you just skipped over.
Thank you, Jesse.
You skipped over like 3 years of pure hell, but yeah, well done there.
Yeah, all the stories you've heard were not true. I actually recorded all the drums in like a weekend, like a long weekend, and I don't know why it took so long.
That's true, but what he's not saying is that he did it like 12 times.
He did actually cop to that, and I don't know, I think the first episode Trav was on, we just talked about the Unteachers pretty much the whole episode, I think.
I was holding my breath the entire time.
It was a weird experience, because it made me feel like I can do this. I've done this before. Why can't I play drums? I'm having such a hard time. What is the deal? It was something about that album. It just had a weird bell curve on it that just I couldn't get it to go right.
Mm-hmm.
None of us could. It was, you know, please, somebody else shoulder some blame for me here.
Before we get too far into the depths of the pain that is A Human Comedy, let's play a song from it. I think I've played Higher Horses a couple times on this podcast. That's far and away my favorite song on it. I don't know. Can we play?
Yeah, way to pick the 16-minute song.
I know.
Good idea.
Can we play Death Has Been Swallowed? Everybody cool with that?
Now I can go to the bathroom.
All right. You're going to have to pinch it off quick, because we're not playing Higher Horses. Death Has Been Swallowed.
Thank you. guess that's the way the whole darn human comedy keeps perpetuating itself down through the generations.
Amen. Hallelujah. Amen.
And there's Uncle Cliff. The end of that song makes me think of a funny story about old Steven here. That was my dad at the end of that song going, amen, amen, amen. he was a wannabe pastor, and we had Bible studies in our house on Friday nights, and that was an audio recording on a cassette tape from 1983 that Steven was good enough to make a digital file of for me. But while we were talking, this reminds me of a story. Steven is my cousin. His mom and my mom are sisters, and Steven was kind of crashing at our house for a while at a point in his life. And
that point would be when my mom threw me out of the house and I was living out of my car.
Wasn't going to say that, but okay. That's out there now. So my cousin was living with us for a while, and my parents were like, we understand you don't have any money, but you know, we can put you to work around the house. You can work off your rent. He was like, all right, it's cool. And he has painting experience. He paints, you know. So they had Steven pressure washing our barn. So Steven's out there with my boombox, and he's pressure washing the side of our barn. And I guess he left his Cannibal Corpse tape in my cassette player. Thanks for that. So my mom found it. His Aunt Carol found it. And which Cannibal Corpse album was it, Steven?
It was Tomb of the Mutilated.
That's it. And the song was Entrails Ripped from a Virgin's C Word. Not gonna.
Rhymes with runt.
There you go. So my mom found this.
How old were you guys at this point?
I was 12.
Oh my goodness.
No, you weren't.
No, I was, it was 1998, so I would have been maybe pushing 20 at the time.
Wow.
So there you go.
Travis was definitely, he knew better.
23, right. So anyway, my mom found it, and she came to me because it's my cassette. It's my tape deck.
And cousins never throw each other under the bus, right? Never.
Well.
Never.
Yes, they do. Because you didn't let me finish my story.
Yeah. Okay.
So my mom comes up to me, and she says, I know that you and even Steven have been listening to some questionable Christian music your entire life, which is true. You know, listen to some heavy stuff. You don't know what they're saying. And I was like, okay. I had no idea where she was going with this. I was like, am I in trouble for listening to Motley Crue again? I didn't know what she was talking about.
Yeah, right.
And she like reaches in her pocket and pulls out this Cannibal Corpse tape. And my eyes fell right on the label. And I was like, oh, no. And she was like, and I don't really understand the lyrics, but I just don't quite understand how these... And she's pointing at that song title.
Yeah.
My mom's pointing at the C-bomb. And I don't understand how these can be misconstrued. And I was like
listen, I understand Stryper. There's some controversy behind that band, you know.
Right.
But
so that was the opportunity for me to say, oh, well, yeah, but, you know, and not throw my cousin under the bus. Nope. I grabbed Steven by the belt and the back of his shirt. And I was like, that's Steven's tape. I never heard of that band before in my life.
Yeah. Now, see, the beauty of this story is that if he had been honest, he would have been like, yeah, I have a lot of, like, secular metal mixed in with my Christian cassettes upstairs. But he wasn't bothering her to explain the ins and out.
I'm not taking a bullet for Cannibal Corpse. I've never owned a Cannibal Corpse tape in my life. That's all you, son.
It's funny because, I don't know, like, Travis had I'm not blaming you for this, Travis, of course, but you had a deep impact on my music listenings, a lot of secular music. I think the first time I heard, like, weird stuff like Primus and all that was probably at your house during Easter Sunday, where we would hide in your bedroom and listen to all the weird cassettes you stole from some store.
I stole a few, yeah.
Or they were probably just the Christian cassettes. But anyway.
It was easier to steal those.
Yeah, exactly.
He has a trusting face.
They were kind of thankful you stole Scattered Few and got it out of their store. But, no, but, you know, we would spend Easters at Travis's house, and I'd go up there in his room, and we would just listen to cassette tapes. And I would be like, whoa, what is this weird thing? What are these weird bands? So a lot of those bands came from just sort of like, you know, like Meshuggah. I remember first time hearing that kind of crazy noise at your house. But I mean, yeah, Cannibal Corpse was definitely, I was really into it. It was real aggressive. It was, I loved the death metal blast beats and all that stuff. And I just figured Travis probably had a copy of it up in his room, and like, he'll vouch for me. You know, we're into this secular metal thing together. It's a secret.
That reminds me of another story. Meshuggah reminds me of another story. At Christmas at your house, check this out. I brought the first thing I ever owned by Meshuggah was Destroy, Erase, Improve, and we'll circle back to that in a minute. But immediately after that, maybe like 2 days after I got a copy of Destroy, I went and bought the Nun EP, right? Nun has 4 songs on it. And then there's a buried track called Aztec Two-Step. Remember? You'll remember the story. Aztec Two-Step is just like almost like a noise track. And then it drops down and it dies off, and there's 15 minutes of silence. And then it comes back in with ga-ga-ga-ga or something really loud, right? We were listening to it at your house, and right at the end of that song, your mom was like, it's time to eat, right? So we got to the end of it, and when the song was over, you were like, it's over? And I remember you turned the volume all the way up because nothing was happening because you thought you heard something, but you never pushed stop. So 15 minutes later, we just heard this bah! From down the hall, and everyone just turned and looked at us, and we were like, oh, man, we're always in trouble.
I don't even remember that, but that's hilarious.
It was your house at the really steep hill where you got lost in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was at that house, yeah.
Jesse and Seth are like, when will this stop?
Steven got lost in the woods.
Can we keep going?
Yeah. No. So just the other day, Steven, out of the blue, unprovoked, we weren't even talking about anything before, he just emails me and he goes, I have a couple things to talk to you about. First of all, Destroy, Erase, Improve is the best Meshuggah album, hands down. That's all he said. And I was like,
well, I haven't heard it so long, and I just got a hunger for it the other day. I was like, you know, I really want to hear Meshuggah before they change their guitars into bass-sounding amps, you know, or eight-string guitars that sound like basses.
Before they borrowed Korn's equipment, you mean? Yeah.
But before they decided that all of their guitar effects and all of their drums should be presetted like software programs, they used to actually microphone their amps and all, and they had a really legitimate analog metal recording, like, you know, like records from bands like Death and you know, like Sepultura, a lot of the, like, what was Scott Burns, that guy, like all those like metal albums.
Yeah, the Florida studios just amazing.
There's such a different production sound between, you know, early Cannibal Corpse and new Cannibal Corpse, and you know, in some ways it's kind of improved and bigger and louder, but in other ways it's not as warm, and it doesn't have that like same crushing distortion sound as it used to have. And so like I kind of was like in the mood for a crushing old school metal album, and that was the one that I thought of. And
well, get this, you sent me that on the 30th or the 31st, and then Seth has been up here for New Year's, and he says, well, it's 2015, what bands came out 15 years ago, what bands came out 20 years ago? Guess what this is the 20th anniversary of. Jesse, hit it.
Oh!
So Steven's a big part of my life because every day, almost every day of my life, something reminds me of Steven because in addition to his many musical talents, he's also an incredibly gifted screen printer. And oftentimes, the clothes I'm wearing come from Steven. Steven, you have personally touched a lot of my clothing.
Mm. And hence Jesse as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. In a roundabout way, Steven is touching Jesse's body all over the place right now.
I believe that's ipso facto or something. I don't know what that means, but
touching hearts and
the, what can I say? The dude abides. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm wearing one of my several hoodies. I might even the other day Trav was making fun of me because I had the Veritas vinyl hoodie on that you made me. And the Unteacher's t-shirt, and I probably had like tantrum boxers on or something. I can't remember.
But we should make those
tantrum booty shorts. I had a pair of
I like that.
Yeah. For the ladies.
Little burning pig heads.
Oh, they're for the ladies?
Little upside down hearts. Yeah.
Oh, awkward.
So you're always screen printing or making music or something. What's going on?
Wait, rephrase that question, please.
You're always doing things. What's going on? How do you keep all that straight? You're like
really,
a renaissance
man. I'm not a fan of doing a lot of things, and with a new child, that's been the most busy part of my life. I'm working on a new record. I'm in the writing stages. It's going really well. Got a lot of things to use for that record.
So you're saying a new album in 2015?
I'm hoping for that. Yeah, awesome. I mean, it's a new year.
I'll put it on the blogs tomorrow.
What happened? What just happened?
As far as what I'm up to, that's kind of what I'm up to. I don't want a human comedy to be the only album I've done in the next 10 years, which was kind of what happened with the last record I did was Modern Music. And that was in 2000, so it was a long, long space there. And I kind of got some momentum with when Human Comedy came out. You know, got a lot of as far as people hearing it and what they thought of it. I mean, everybody's been just super thrilled with it, and that's great. I think it's extremely overlooked compared to the amount of work we put into it. But that's kind of
a crazy time right now.
It's a crazy time, and without being out promoting it and playing and stuff like that, it's kind of a lot to do with it. But we were nominated from HM Magazine for the year end best of new album and best song, and they didn't choose us, but I think that was because HM Magazine's trying really hard to show that they'd rather talk about secular bands and Christian bands. That do good music. So there's no real place for heavy, good Christian themed artists at the moment. So I think that's a reason why that got overlooked. But
I mean, put us up against Demon Hunter too. What are we gonna?
Yeah.
I mean,
it was really, really, it was awesome to be nominated, and it was awesome to have something that I guess that public recognized that it should have been on the list. I think that Unteacher Seth W, one of your
gracious
hosts, yes, he was very gracious and put us on his top 10 this year.
Metal Insider.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I think that it came out at the end of the year. Didn't have a lot of time to really get exposed, and obviously the band not playing out is kind of a thing that causes that issue to happen, but. You know, for 2015, I'd like to bounce back quickly. I'd like to, remedy all of that. And I think the songs deserve more attention, and I hope that people will hear it.
You got to make a video. When's the video coming out?
Well, Travis and I and Brad, our fourth member during that process, and Josh, we're all kind of still collaborating on a, not a documentary, but sort of a, I don't know, like a, just we're just taking all the footage of everything we've done and adding some little bit to it. And
there will be an Unteachers product this year.
Mm. Yeah, yes.
There's a little teaser
with that same group of people from Human Comedy. But yeah, so we're we're active. I'm active. I'm doing some stuff. I'm going to pay Travis to play drums on my next record. We'll see if he we'll see if he responds.
You can't afford me.
Got to raise a Kickstarter. Got to start a Kickstarter.
I'm going to get a Kickstarter to get Travis, my cousin,
can't afford me,
to come over for Easter dinner, and I will listen to Sugar with him and get him to play on the next record. But we'll see what happens. No, so yeah, I'm pretty busy with that. I'm writing music and trying to. I'm still painting houses. I paint for a living, and I don't know. I'm pretty a boring guy, actually. Nothing really exciting to talk about unless you ask me specific questions. But that's pretty much what I'm doing: raising a little baby girl and writing.
Yeah, I was just gonna say you're not boring. You just took on like you and your wife Sarah are every single minute of the next 20 years of your life is completely occupied.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were boring before. It's all changed now.
Yeah, exactly.
Is your wife still doing roller derby?
She is on a smaller level. She, you know,
she just uses one skate. She just skates on one. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, she's one wheel per skate now, but she's the president of the Dutchland Rollers here in Lancaster, and still makes decisions and keeps.
I didn't even know that she's president.
She's the one of the founders of the team.
Right, that I knew, but I didn't know she was.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's just super impressive that she's still sticking it out and still doing it. Nice. But you know, she's not an all-star skater at the moment. She's kind of taking a leave of absence for that.
She needs a little time.
I can't imagine
back.
Why.
Yeah.
And we've already given Alice a roller derby skating name, and that's Alice Pooper. And
that is genius.
Wow. Yeah. And the girls adopted that name now, and they call her Little Alice Pooper. So yeah, I mean, she took Alice to about recently, and all the girls were swarming around her and holding her and stuff. So yeah, I mean, she's involved on that level.
Imagine how different the NFL would look, Seth, if 5 or 6 players every year got pregnant.
Very true. Very true.
You'd need like a deeper bench, like a lot.
Yeah.
You know, our starting tackles just found out he's pregnant. He's expecting, so
oops,
he's out till week 15 of next year. So yeah, that's gonna be weird now.
It sounds like a hilarious buddy comedy from the 80s. You know, yeah. Half my starting lineup is pregnant. What am I gonna do?
Yeah, but I'm glad to be on the show, and A Human Comedy is out, and big thanks to Jesse for that, for taking a super huge risk and allowing us to pursue that despite sort of the curse that followed us and the bad luck and all of what is yet to be determined, all of what is yet to be written in a book. It'll probably come out later this year. Trav will probably write that book, right?
I don't know how to read, so.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's got to do that first.
Yeah. Hooked on Phonics did not work for Trav.
But also, too, like, I mean, Modern Music 2000 turns 15 years old this year. Whenabouts is that? When did that come out?
We recorded that in the spring of 2000.
Yes,
and it came out in July. It came out actually at Cornerstone Festival, the opening day of Cornerstone Festival. I would say like the 3rd or 4th of July.
That's right. I was there, Clay Creek Studios in Newark.
And that wasn't Travis spent a couple days there with us. We just went in there, and it was like old school. Like, we didn't even know how to make an album, and here we are in a real studio with analog recording equipment, and you know, I have those reels still, and I'm actually planning on it's going to be a massive undertaking, but I really think Modern Music has never really been production wise mix wise correct, and I'm planning on converting those reels and getting the mix a little bit heavier, and just fixing a lot of the dryness that's on that record. Like, it's very dry, and it's very lacking in the bass heaviness that, I mean, if you had seen Tantrum live, or if you had heard the 4-track demos of that album, it was so much more crushing and heavy than the record allowed. So I'd like to sort of do a George Lucas move on that record and kind of fix it and make it sound the way it was supposed to sound. Obviously, we're not going to re-record things, so it's going to be the same recording. It's just going to sound better. And then I want to get that pig head on a vinyl cover. I just think it just there has never been for me any artwork that has been able to touch that, and I would love to see that on my record shelf.
It's a memorable cover for sure.
Yeah,
the fact that it's real and it's not like some painting or digital piece of art.
Yeah, absolutely. What's crazy about that is the room was very bright. It was in an attic bedroom of mine. It looked sort of like the Blair Witch house at the very end of Blair Witch. It literally had black handprints on the walls like the Blair Witch house, which is bizarre. But I used to sleep in that room, and we just pushed all my bedroom stuff aside. We did that photography shoot, and what you see on that cover literally is 100% untampered, untouched. She handed me the photo exposed, and that is what it was. And we were just like, we couldn't believe how clean it was and how dark it was around the photo. And I just
It raised a lot of controversy.
Yeah. A lot of moms didn't like it. That's for sure.
Who carved the shapes of the apple?
The photographer that was a girlfriend of mine, and her name was Katie, and she had done that with her fingernail, and that's why it has that sort of constant rounding shape to it. If you look close, you'll see it looks like someone took a fingernail, their thumbnail, and just carved it, and that's what she did. And it was because we had forgotten to do it, and we didn't have a knife at the time, so she just scratched those things into the apple. And
Katie is a photographer.
She was a photographer. She did it for a hobby. She had a photography
and nice what camera. And what else has she done in photography for you? Just not cluing this together, right?
I'm really not. No.
Didn't she do the Unteachers cover for us?
No. You're thinking of a different Katie. And that's funny. I never
put that together. Swing and a miss. There's a second Katie photographer that you know.
Yeah.
Oh.
Katie with a C. A.
Shit. I screwed that up.
Yeah. But I've never put that together that another Katie did our next record. But
I'd like to go back and play that thing where Trav says, "You're not putting this together, are you?"
Yeah, keep all that in. It's wonderful.
Yeah, great. It's just not a podcast until I have to say something out loud about it. And I'm embarrassing myself. So, yeah. Damn it.
No, Katie, I can't even remember her last name, but Katie Lambert was the one who did our newest cover. And the Unteachers cover was really just that was Travis and Josh. I basically kind of – I felt like, you know, I had these songs written. I came in. I sort of showed the songs to the guys, and then you guys put your thing over it. And it was sort of like – I felt like I had so much say over everything. And the truth is I really just was like – I had no idea for a cover. I just didn't know what a human comedy should resemble. And Josh and Travis had like 8,000 ideas. So I said, why don't you guys just come up with the concept? I'll step back and I'll give this cover to you guys and you can figure it out. So the only thing that I contributed to the concept of the cover is I put my Calvinist leanings on it by putting a tulip on the front and the crucifix fish bones, which I thought was a cool image. I hid that on the cover. But other than that, that's Travis's concept and Josh's concept. And we all kind of agreed that it should resemble walking away from darkness, walking away from death and sickness and disease. You know, very specifically sickness because of, you know, Trav's dad, he got sick. And that was a very important part of what we were trying to convey and our Christ-like message, you know, and our sort of like what we believe, you know, what Christ is doing you know, through us, and what death means as a Christian. What does that symbolize? So we really wanted to convey all that with the artwork, and that is why when you flip the LP around, you see something contrasting what's in the front. And so all of that is all – everything you see on that is very particular and put together. And Josh and Travis, anytime anyone's ever asked me, what does that cover mean, I immediately forward the email and say, go ask them. I have no, to me, it just symbolizes change, symbolizes spiritual change and being on the cusp of spiritual change and walking through a door to a new way of living. And that's essentially what it means. But there are meanings behind the fish and the spilled water and the moon and all that stuff.
I genuinely feel like it was, I mean, you know, people who don't believe would say out-of-body experience or something like that. I was not steering the ship on those art ideas. They were flowing out of me, and everything I said, yeah. Steven was like, oh, my God, that's such a great idea. And I'm not that guy. I'm not artistic. I don't draw.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah. I am very dumb, and I'm not very creative at all. And all those ideas
were vouching sets.
Just made sense. And
have you seen the Half Bomber stuff? No, I'm kidding.
I know. What a Nimrod!
It's
right?
The back. It's the their backs turned.
Right. What is that?
Who is in charge of that art? That band's a bunch of morons. But yeah, I even at the end of it, I was like, whoa, what was that all about? Everybody likes it.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtle things about it. I mean, it's called a human comedy, and so there was the whole comedy tragedy mask idea. And if you look really close, Katie Lambert, who's on the cover of the album, she's very it's very subtle, but she's smiling very lightly on one side and she's frowning very lightly on the other side. And you know, we didn't want to slap people over the head with the theater mask. You know, we didn't want it to be theater of pain, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah, that was my little nod to the crew. That's
yeah,
all
exactly. But we wanted that sort of like curtain opening, you're walking through to a different, you know. And she did all of that photography herself. She took pictures of everything and then pieced it together.
Yeah.
And then Seth, our... My brother-in-law, he had helped record some things, and we almost had him in the band there for a little while. Seth Luzier, he was the one who handled all the layout of that, and he helped format it and do the shading and the lighting and all that stuff and sort of make it a little better on the eyes. But yeah, I mean, Katie Lambert's was a super huge help, and her brother actually was in on Teachers. He actually was the original drummer. Back when in the first lineup we did in 2007, it was very short lived, and so yeah, that's the story there. And the ocean picture in there is from our honeymoon, so that's kind of cool. We got to use our honeymoon pictures. So
the two ladies looking at each other always reminds me of the Never Ending Story when he's got to go through like the two things looking down on him.
Yeah.
I think of that every time. I
don't... Now, if we were really smart, we would have put that flying dragon dog thing.
That's called a Falcor.
Oh.
Falcor was his name. He was called a luck dragon.
It was called what?
A luck dragon.
Luck dragon.
Oh, I'm a luck dragon.
No, Atreyu was the boy.
Boy, yeah.
Oh, my bad.
And a really crappy band.
Oh snap! No, you didn't. We got
Unteacher's vocalist is Atreyu.
Clickety clack clack.
I wish people could see Seth right now with his phone.
No.
Yeah. So I just think the whole end product for me is that it reminds me of like a dusty 70s prog album you'd see, like some like French prog band or something you'd see in a vinyl. You know, you're flipping through records and you're like, what is this? There's no words on the cover and it's very odd looking. And that's kind of what I was hoping it would look like. And that's kind of what it reminds me of.
Well, it turned
or
out
like an unknown King Crimson record or something.
It turned out great.
It works. Yeah. Go ahead.
It turned out great. There was a ton of work and the art is very striking. And the digital art, most people have probably seen, you can see it. It's on Spotify and iTunes and everything. I don't know. There's nowhere you can't find it digitally pretty much. But if you order the LP's got this very cool, transparent type fold over thing that Steven painstakingly handed each one.
It was very painstaking.
That overlays. And it turned out really cool. I mean, from my end, it's easy to say, wow, it was worth all the hard work, because I didn't do anything. I just said, hey, Steve, do you have those yet? Do you have them yet? Do you have them yet? That was the extent of my involvement in pain and suffering with that. But it turned out really cool. Tons of great comments on that. The records at VeritasVinyl.net. I don't know what else to say. It turned out great. Wish we would have done it on black vinyl. I guess that's my only... But I have a test pressing, so I can listen to the test pressing. Everyone else.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
We'll do the second pressing on red, gold, and black. There you go.
The repress.
Yeah.
Jesse's skin just crawled at the idea of, I have to do this twice.
See, that's worse than the second album, because I know the second album's at least 5 years out, probably, based on the last schedule.
No. Give me time to start saving up.
I refuse. I will simplify. I will cut out keyboard ideas. We will make this go out. This will happen fast. I have a loop pedal now.
Just picture, let's just sum up this whole podcast so we can wrap it up. Recording the Unteachers album was exactly like going and watching the Mr. Crinkle video from Primus in my friend Brad's house. Just go watch that.
But that video lasted for 3 years straight.
Except it was 2009 through 12, 13, and there's.
I don't know how we can do this someday. I really want to tell that story, just like in a comedic way, because now we can laugh. But like somehow, I would love
Steven, if we could just put out some sort of a documentary film, something that maybe we had been recording the entire process, and we tie it all together and put it in some sort of a feature length film that will probably be out by this fall. If only we could pull that off.
If only there was a place to upload video to the internet for lots of people to see.
Wait, yeah. You can put video on my computer box?
You guys are literally pulling a Tim and Eric stunt right now. That's what it sounds like.
I put some rolls in my mouth.
I'm into punk rock Totino's pizza rolls and Unteachers.
Oh, my word. Punk rock, yeah. Yeah, I don't think that documentary thing we're working on is going to be more than just footage of us recording, but we really should turn it into more of a, like, do you see now what we've been through? And maybe the album sounds way better now, knowing what we've gone through.
It's going to make me laugh. I frankly don't care what anybody else thinks.
That's true, yeah. Nope. You know, the unfortunate thing is we did a really great hidden track that we were back, you know, in our the dreaming days, we were going to do some big production. We were going to have CDs of this album available, and we were thinking for the CD, we'd have this hidden track. We have a hidden track with a lot of really golden moments on it, but one got to hear it because the vinyl obviously wasn't meant for vinyl.
The blooper reel. Yeah.
The blooper reel is great, and someday we'll have to get that out there for everybody to hear. So
yeah.
All righty. Well, thanks for joining us, Steven.
Thanks for having me.
Man, it's the best. This was a lot of fun. I'm surprised I got all four phone calls on my computer to work without dropping. I'm very happy about
that. Yeah.
So, Jesse, what do you got? You want to take us out, play a song?
I do. What song are we listening to, Steven? Something from Fluffy. That's all I know.
Oh, you know, I've been listening to the show, and everybody sort of has like a punk rock favorite. I have a lot of punk songs, but you guys covered some of my favorites. There's an obscure, not really well-known band called Fluffy that came out, not the all-female band, but this band was fronted by the Breakfast with Amy guitarist Chris Colbert, and these guys were pretty straightforward hardcore punk, but they were kind of weird, and they sort of like, they went into sort of a psychedelic noise rock phase, and this is sort of in between the punk rock and the weird stuff that came later. And this is from a record called Go Fluffy Go. It's very rare, sort of a hidden gem. It's a Mike Knott production, for those who know who Mike Knott is. And
77.
From his 1990s label called Blonde Vinyl.
Yeah.
And this album came out in 1992. It's called, the song's called Little Finger Eye.
Too fast.